Welcome, baseball fans, to Hacks and Jacks. Brett Ford here with Scott Chu talking hitters on pitcher list. It's been a couple weeks between vacations and sickness. Scott and I just haven't been able to work out a time, but we're finally back. And Scott is championing through this one, nursing a little bit of a cold, but he's a trooper. He's a hockey player, and he's here to talk bats with us. Scott, how are you doing?
Well, I'm sure no one's even going to notice this gravel pit of a voice I've got right now, but we're doing this. We're talking baseball.
Let's jump right into some news and notes from the past week or so. We've got a handful of guys going to the IL. Los Angeles Dodgers infielder Tommy Edman, Chicago White Sox infielder Miguel Vargas, Texas outfielder Evan Carter, and Milwaukee Brewers outfielder Jackson Chourio all headed to the IL. And Chourio actually just provided an update that he's going to be out even a few more weeks with his condition. Talk to me about those guys and how you might try to counteract maybe if you have one of them on your roster.
Yeah, so I mean, with Chourio, you just hold and you go through. But honestly, for the three others, Edman, Vargas, Carter, I'm not holding in most 12-team leagues, heck, even a 15-team league. It depends on how active the wire is, how deep the benches are. But yeah, none of those guys have really done a whole lot. Vargas was heating up just a little bit again, but he still hasn't showed us he can be good for more than about a month at a time, and then he goes back to being very, very bad. So yeah, I'm holding. Obviously, you're holding Jackson Chourio if you've got any kind of IL space. But Edman, Vargas, Carter, you can let them go. And frankly, I don't think it does a lot for like the guys that are going to step into their place, right? Like there's not really anything exciting coming out of there. Like with the, you know, if we go to like the Rangers, like there's nobody like, oh, now this guy's going to get time, right? Like that's not really like, it's Alejandro Osuna, I think, gets time. Like, cool. Like Ezekiel Duran, maybe. Like not interesting. So that's true with the White Sox as well. There's nothing really going on.
We talk about a couple guys that are coming back from the IL. San Francisco Giants utility man Gerard Encarnacion, Los Angeles Angels infielder Christian Moore, and then kind of almost a direct swap for the Dodgers, Max Muncy is back. Any of those three names pique your interest at all?
I mean, obviously Muncy, hopefully you held on to him. He's got a ton of power. He's really streaky, sure, but you're holding on to that. Gerard Encarnacion, I had interest in him in the preseason because he's got a bunch of power, but he still has nowhere to play, right? They didn't move that many people off this roster. I think, you know, the DA, like between occasional DH and right field spots, like there is an open spot in right field for Gerard Encarnacion to claim. I just don't know if he will. They actually sat him the first day they called him back. He is hitting today. He's batting sixth. It would be nice if he can do that. And then he might be of interest in deeper leagues just for the power, but that's probably about it there. And then, you know, Christian Moore, he got hot that one time, but most people have probably forgotten about that. And that's, you know, that's the right move.
Well, typically we talk about guys who have called up or sent down from the minors, but, you know, a lot of those moves, especially the past couple weeks, have come with, you know, in combination with a trade at the deadline. It was such a wild deadline. So many, you know, guys moving from here to there. A lot of pitchers moved, but there were some bats that moved also. And when we come back, we'll talk about bats who gained fantasy appeal as a result of the trade deadline and some bats that lost traction as well. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. Brett Ford here with Scott Chu talking bats on pitcher list. And we had a wild trade deadline. Let's talk about some guys who maybe gained some fantasy appeal based on opportunity changes, based on personnel changes at the deadline, and how that affected them. We'll start in Baltimore, where the Orioles traded away Ryan O'Hearn, and that kind of opened the door for first baseman Coby Mayo. And it was good timing because Mayo, the past couple weeks, has really started to show some power, started to show you know, signs of life as far as a hit tool. Scott, what are you seeing in Coby Mayo? And is he somebody who might be fantasy relevant for the next 2 months?
It'd be tough to pull him in a 12-team league just because first base has been so deep. So Coby Mayo definitely, I think, is a long-term prospect to someone you're looking at, you know, first base. He does. I mean, he has real power, you know, legitimate raw power. You know, he loves to pull the ball, all that stuff. The thing is, that stuff's going to take a little time, I think, to develop. We saw that with his, you know, we've seen 40 games from him this year. They're not great. They will get better. Again, he's got that profile that takes time. I think the couple other things that happened were by trading Cedric Mullins, one, that gave Jackson Holliday, I think, a pretty good run at that leadoff spot for a while. So if you've been holding him, second base is a wasteland, you can keep holding him. And then Colton Cowser, who hasn't done a lot lately, he's another guy. He's got locked in playing time now. There's not really much threat for a platoon here. So they really cleaned out. I mean, they needed to clear out room for some of these guys to get everyday time in Baltimore, and they did. So Cowser is now an everyday guy. I mean, so is Dylan Carlson, but nobody cares.
Well, Tyler O'Neill would be an everyday guy if he could ever stay healthy. You know, he's one in Baltimore that could see an increase in playing time if he can stay on the field. He actually left Tuesday night's game with an injury already after just coming back from the IL. And then another name that we might see in the coming weeks is the return of Heston Kerstad. Kerstad has been in AAA Norfolk for the past couple of weeks, going on months now, but was a guy who came up with a little bit of fanfare, had some power. Is Kerstad somebody who you at least have?
Yeah, I mean, he's a streamer in the outfield if you need one, especially in like four or five outfield leagues. Like Jeremiah Jackson isn't, I think, going to stick around that long. He's just kind of holding some space for them. So, you know, Vidal Bruhan got added to this team over the break, but nobody cares. Like, he just runs. He's a pinch runner for them, which, you know, isn't something you need when you're last in your division, but they've got one. So, yeah, you know, don't get too excited about Ryan Noda, because I do think we see Ryan Mountcastle come back. That's the one other thing that could put pressure on Kobe Mayo's playing time, is that I think by the end of this month, you know, definitely by the end of this month, we're going to see Ryan Mountcastle again. He's definitely going to eat up that time at first base. Now, Kobe Mayo can then, you know, DH. He can, you know, I don't think they'll play him at third base, but we'll have to see how that all breaks down. That also impacts Kerstad as well.
Well, let's move on to Cincinnati, where the Reds acquired third baseman Cabrian Hayes from division rival Pittsburgh at the deadline. Hayes with a pretty significant ballpark upgrade as far as home park goes. Is he somebody that might move up your third base ranks?
No. I mean, he'd have to be playing in a little league park to be a power threat. That's just not, I mean, he'll hit a couple, but that's not part of his game. He's there because he plays really, really good third base defense. And apparently because they are interested in this Noel V. Marte in the outfield experiment. So, you know, we'll kind of see how that goes. I think, you know, Cabrian Hayes is going to hit at the bottom of this lineup. He's not that interesting for fantasy. It didn't really change any of the other pieces that are going on here. So, you know, it's a nice move. Like, NL only managers will care, maybe. But yeah, I mean, they got Cabrian Hayes. He plays defense. That's all he really does.
Yeah, the only real residual effect of that trade was Will Benson being sent down to the minors, which I think was coming anyway with Marte moving to right field. And of course, Benson is fast and has power, but can't make contact. So
that's basically how that goes. He has a couple hot weeks every year, and people always ask us about him, and then, you know, we have the same old song and dance of streaky power hitters going to streak.
Oh, we'll move on to a more interesting name, at least in dynasty leagues, and that's Arizona first baseman Tyler Locklear. Locklear acquired from the Mariners in one of the Diamondbacks trades with the Mariners. They sent both Josh Naylor and Eugenio Suarez in separate deals to the Pacific Northwest. But Locklear has gotten the past four starts at first base for the Diamondbacks. And I believe he hit his first career home run earlier this week. Talk to me about Locklear. Are you excited from what you've seen so far?
Yeah. Again, 12 team perspective is tough because first base is deep. But as a replacement level guy, I think there might be something here. He's got a little speed, which is unusual at first base. He's already got a stolen base up in the major so far. The strikeouts might be a little bit of a problem, right? So he was striking out somewhere around like between 20 and 25% of the time in AAA as we'd seen him for the last 2 years. That number is going to bump up a little bit as he adjusts to major league pitching, but he's held his own so far through all of 16 plate appearances this year. He didn't look that good last year for Seattle, but you know, it's a new dawn. So I think he's definitely got plenty of runway at first base for the Diamondbacks. So he's going to play. If you need a replacement level guy, maybe a little bit of, you know, random speed, I think he can do that for you. Better in OBP though. He'll take his walks.
Well, speaking of the Diamondbacks, all these trade deadline moves, they open their corner infield positions, and you know, fantasy managers are probably expecting to see Jordan Lawler, but Lawler is still in AAA, and instead there's a guy named Connor Kizer on the Diamondbacks major league roster. What do we think about Jordan Lawler? I know this opens an opportunity for him, but do you think that the Diamondbacks will eventually, you know, get him to the majors once he's back from his current injury?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's really the thing, right? He's got this hamstring injury. It's going to bother him maybe for a little while. Look, he was miserable in the short time we saw him in the majors earlier this year. It was 22 scattered plate appearances because he didn't have an opportunity. This time he'll have an opportunity. There's a job to hand him. So it could go a little better. I'm not sure that I'm, you know, maybe you're scooping him because you're desperate at like second base, where in Yahoo leagues he'd probably qualify, I think. But yeah, he's, you know, he's still a highly regarded prospect despite all the injuries and the terrible debut.
Well, let's move to Minnesota. We've got several moves that the Twins made at the deadline. They pretty much dumped their entire roster or distributed it across the major leagues. Willie Castro goes to Chicago, where it looks like he's going to get everyday playing time for the Cubs as kind of a super utility role. He's already played in the outfield. I believe he's had a game at shortstop, giving Dansby Swanson a breather. Any fantasy impact for Castro? Any appeal there?
No, not really. I actually kind of liked him a little better in Minnesota because he was more likely to hit like high in the order and in a good place. And I think Chicago can just kind of bury him. So he's actually less appealing to me there. I guess maybe it puts a little bit more pressure on Matt Shaw to perform at third base. He's been very inconsistent. Now they've got another guy who can play third base, but mostly it's, you know, no news. He was a fringe roster guy in 12 team leagues, and he remains a fringe roster guy in 12 team leagues, who's mostly useful for his versatility and a little bit of speed, a little bit of pop.
Well, the Twins kind of, opened the door for several guys in their lineup, and I'm looking at their roster resource page. There's almost a completely different lineup. I think five new starters as of last week at the trade deadline. Guys like Luke Keyshaw, Cody Clemens, Brooks Lee, all thrown into everyday roles now for Minnesota. Which one of those guys, or are there more than one that you're interested in for fantasy purposes?
Obviously, Keyshaw, who was excellent before he got hurt, he's the main attraction here. He's, you know, he hit a home run today. He also got caught stealing, but yeah, he hit a home run already from coming back. He looks great. He looks like, you know, a real stud for them. He was seen as this sort of high floor prospect, and it looks like there's even more ceiling there than we thought there might be. So at least from early indications, right? He's getting on base a ton. He's not striking out. A lot of really good things to see there. As far as, you know, the rest of the lineup, Austin Martin is a guy who's leading off for them, but like that's only an NL-only move. Matt Wallner might not get platooned, but, you know, he's a streaky power hitter. He's streaking hot right now. You can stream him if you want, but that's what he is, streaky power hitter. He really struggles to make contact. Ryan Jeffers is now like the number three hitter, plays every day. He's also the DH. So again, if you're hurting at catcher, Ryan Jeffers can hit the ball hard. I'm not that interested in Cody Clemens. Again, he's mostly a first baseman. He doesn't really do anything interesting. And finally, there was Brooks Lee. He's still hitting at the bottom of the order. He's a streamer who can play multiple positions, do a little bit of everything, but nothing particularly well. And finally, a name that had some traction early in the season when he was still at Toronto, Alan Rodon, is playing a bit for this team. Just, you know, because that name might sound familiar. They even had him like leading off and batting second earlier or over the weekend. Maybe a name to keep an eye on in very, very deep leagues, but not looking at him in 12s. Same for, you know, the guy they've always got, Edouard Julien, who's probably not going to play at all anymore with Keyshaw back. He played four straight games, but now that Keyshaw's back, he hits the bench. So Julien probably not going to play much anymore. And, you know, as a prospect, he just can't hit stuff in the zone. Like, he's real good at knowing where it is, but he can't get his bat there.
Well, I think the most appealing thing about Keyshaw is his second base eligibility. You know, that position notably shallow. And he's definitely an exciting prospect, speed and power combination for the Twins. And like you said, Matt Wallner started and batted second against a left-handed starter in the Twins' last game. Or I'm sorry, batted third against a left-handed starter in the Twins' last game against the lefty. That was on Sunday. So yeah, it looks like he's not getting platooned. It looks like he's going to get everyday run out in right field for Minnesota. So that kind of boosts his fantasy value a little bit.
I mean, what choice do they have, right? Mickey Gasper, Ryan Fitzgerald. Like, I honestly couldn't tell you much about those guys besides their names, which I just read. That is about the extent of what I know about them.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where we're at for the Minnesota Twins. And they've unfortunately become like this year's Pittsburgh Pirates of the American League, where everybody wants the owner to sell the team and nobody is happy.
That's because they're broke. They have like two guys under contract next year that aren't in arbitration. It's a fire sale because it's literally a fire sale. They're broke.
Yeah, it's wild times in Minnesota. We will take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about next week's hitters list. Scott's been working hard to put that out, and we'll give you a little bit of a preview on it after this break. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. We're talking bats on pitcher list. This week is a little bit different. You know, we had some issues with scheduling with, you know, vacations and sickness. So we're recording midweek, which is different for us. But instead of going back and looking at last week's hitters list, we're going to push forward and tease next week's list a little bit. That's going to publish either Wednesday or Thursday. Typically Scott puts it out midweek. Scott, talk to us about, kind of what you're thinking for this week, starting with one of the guys we just talked about before the break, Luke Keyshaw.
Yeah, so Keyshaw's back from the IL. Second base is such a difficult position to deal with. So I was looking at my ranks and thinking, where do I put him? And it really feels like he's going to fall somewhere in tier 11, which as of the last list was between 98 and 115. So he's going to be right around that range. We're looking at like, that's where Luis Garcia Jr. is, Otto Lopez, Michael Garcia, except he's going to move up just because he's shown us that power again. He, you know, Michael Garcia was a guy who showed power, then it all went away and he wasn't really doing anything. He's showing power again, so he'll move up. And so, yeah, other guys, I mean, Xander Bogaerts is in this tier too. So that's where I'm starting Keyshaw. Again, there's a lot of risk here. We have not seen a lot of him. It feels like we saw more of him than we did. But I think he's a guy who definitely like immediate scoop in all leagues where he's not scooped already. And, you know, he's someone who I think could push that, you know, push to get into like the top 90, top 80. I don't know that I see more than that right now. He doesn't have a big standout tool, but, you know, time will tell.
Yeah. Keyshaw kind of being thrust almost directly into the top 100 coming off of injury. And like Scott said, he's available, and wherever he's available, he should be scooped up in those 12 and 15 leagues for sure. Let's stay in the AL Central. Let's move to the south side of Chicago. Colson Montgomery is, you know, with the White Sox selling off a couple pieces at the deadline, is getting a little bit more of a larger opportunity in Chicago. Talk to me about Montgomery.
Yeah. And, you know, I've gotten a couple questions about Colson Montgomery and, you know, hey, is this guy for real? You know, or is this a thing? And the answer is like, you know, maybe he's got all of the makings of a streaky power hitter, right? He strikes out quite a bit. He doesn't walk much, swings the bat real hard, hits the ball hard. Don't get me wrong, but you know, he's not, you know, his zone contact so far is very early, but it's under 80%. You know, I hate that. Yeah, he's got some contact issues and big power. So I think this is a streak more than just like, he's really establishing himself. And like, let's be clear, the White Sox are terrible at developing this type of player. Like, they are not a team that makes guys more patient, that makes them more disciplined in the box, right? I mean, if you're going to succeed in Chicago South Side, you're doing it on your own, because the White Sox have not proven they can make anyone better, and certainly not with any consistency. Like, it's great to see Lewis Robert Jr. really performing well out of the break, but I don't trust that the White Sox had anything to do with that. So he'll probably make the back end of the list, but mostly, you know, a very precautionary, like, yeah, it's 7 home runs in, you know, 25 games. That's awesome. But it's also, you know, take it easy. This is probably just a young guy who's streaky and with contact issues. There's, you know, as they say, you know, even FanGraphs scouting report will tell you, like, hey, there's probably a prolonged adjustment period. It's because he's got big contact issues. That's what that means. Prolonged adjustment period is almost always because your hit tool's rough.
Yeah, to go along with those, you know, first of all 7 of those home runs have come in the last 2 weeks, starting July 22nd. So you talk about streaky, that's about as streaky as they come. And along with those 7 home runs, there's also been, since July 22nd, there's been 11 strikeouts. So it's like you said, it's big contact or it's no contact.
Yeah, just a classic profile.
we'll move on to Pittsburgh, where Spencer Horwitz is starting to show signs of life. You know, a guy who was kind of hyped a little bit as he came up with the Toronto Blue Jays. And he's finding some playing time in Pittsburgh as part of this Pirates organization that's kind of seeing what they have. Horwitz playing first base and batting leadoff on Tuesday night. Scott, what do we like about Horwitz?
Yeah, Horwitz has looked a lot better in the second half. His walk rate's up to 12.5% in 64 plate appearances. The strikeout rate's under 16%, 186 WRC plus. He doesn't hit the ball particularly hard, but he's got good on-base skills. He's got good bat-to-ball skills. He's leading off. Not every day. He'll sit against a lot of lefties. And, like, let's be clear, a lot of these recent numbers are against the Rockies, right? So he's had a massive game on Sunday, 2 home runs, 6 RBI. There's not going to be a whole lot more of that, but he does have some home run pop. Like, overall, the profile is kind of boring. However, when you're eligible at second base, boring is beautiful. So, or as my employer would say, boring is brilliant. Yeah, PNC Park, baby, right? Like, that's all for them. So he's very brilliantly boring over there. A few of you might get that reference. I'm a company man. What do you want me to do? But he'll hit for a decent average, a little bit of pop, and, you know, not exciting, but steady.
Well, you talk about home run power, and you look at Kansas City, where you talked about Michael Garcia a little bit previously, but Garcia is hitting fourth for the Royals in the past 5 games. Is this an Andrés Giménez situation where we have fake power batting fourth, or is this a guy kind of finding his power stroke at the plate?
So Michael Garcia had always teased a little bit of power and just couldn't do it. And he now has 11 home runs, which is as many as he had in all of 2023 and 2024 combined. And he played 280 games in that stretch. So in 111 in games, he's matched that. So we're seeing something a little different. Again, this is not a big power bat, but he could certainly end this year with 15 home runs, 30 stolen bases, and a good batting average, right? Like, he's currently batting .298. He should probably stay in like the .280 to .290 range. As of right now, per the FanGraphs player rater, he is the number one second baseman this year. Yeah, I mean, he's 25 years old. He's found, you know, Kansas City's done something. They found something, finally fixed something that he was doing to just get him to his power a little bit more consistently. He was always good at making contact. It's not one of those kinds of things. It's more of just finding a way to, because like, his barrel rate almost doubled, but it's like 6.1%, right? But he's hitting the ball with a better launch angle. He's getting the ball up a little bit more. So it's a big deal, I think, that he's someone that if you're in a keeper league or something, you might need to start earmarking him as a keeper going into next year, which you almost certainly weren't planning to do on draft day.
Well, speaking of guys who have been hot recently, we moved to Boston, where shortstop Trevor Story has been excellent as of late. Three more RBIs on Tuesday night. You go to his roster resource page and, you know, there's a little red one next to his name under power rank. You don't see that very often other than, you know, guys named Ohtani and Judge and Witt. But Trevor Story's batting .462, 6-for-13 in his past four games entering Tuesday night. He's been absolutely outstanding. He's hit three home runs this past week. Talk to me about Story and what we're seeing in Boston.
My goodness, right? The plate discipline is still garbage, but he's, you know, he spiked big time, you know, right before the All-Star break and then cratered hard. He was terrible for a little stretch there, and now he's back, baby, right? He's hitting it well again. I don't see how this is sustainable long term, but he keeps doing it. He's got 18 home runs and 19 stolen bases. And as with Ramon Laureano, there comes a point where you just like, it doesn't really matter if it's sustainable because it's useful right now. And yeah, I wouldn't cut like a legit top 80 guy for Trevor Story, but I would certainly be looking for somebody to cut for Trevor Story, right? I mean, he's not going to be available. He's been good for too long to probably be on your wires, but he's, you know, this is not a player who I think is someone who I'm like, oh wow, next year I'm really targeting this guy. But for the rest of this season, at least Trevor Story's found some kind of magic potion and it has made him very, very good. Even though, again, the strikeout rate is really, really high, right? It's as high right now as it has been all season. The walk rate is not great, but he's hitting the crap out of the ball. So what are you going to do?
Well, let's head west and talk about a pair of Dodgers. You know, I know that this isn't a Dickens novel, but this is a tale of two seasons, right? It's Mookie Betts, who has just cratered out and kind of appears to have hit his rock bottom this season. And then Freddie Freeman, who is just continuing to be an elite level first baseman. Talk to me about, you know, these guys bat right next to each other in lineups, kind of a weird juxtaposition, but talk to me about the trajectory of Betts and Freeman this season.
I think, you know, I talk about rolling charts a lot, just to give it a sense of like, you know, what is this compared to what we've seen before? And I would really like to say that, oh, don't worry, we've seen this before from Mookie Betts, right? And we have seen slumps from Mookie Betts, but nothing like this, right? This is worse and longer than any slump he's ever had since at least 2020. And if I go back further, it's probably going to stay true, right? Since the start of 2024, it's basically a straight downward trajectory. Now, guys can rebound from this, right? They're usually not Mookie's age. Like, this is kind of what we saw from Bo Bichette, and he's back, right? He's hitting a lot better. But if I've answered some trade questions on Mookie Betts. He's like the worst qualified hitter in baseball since like June 19th. Since like June 1st. If you get to June 19th, then Dane Myers is a little worse than him in that stretch. So he's been that bad. I'm not trading for him anywhere. I don't think you can trade him away. And in a 10 team league, I would consider cutting him for the right player. That's where we are right now with Mookie Betts. There's nothing going on that makes me think that like, this is getting better. Like, he's walking again. There was a while he stopped walking around the break. He's walking again, which is cool, but he's not hitting. I don't really care if he walks, right? I need him to hit. And that, like, there's nothing in the data that tells me like, oh yeah, he's turning it all around. It's all coming. There's nothing there, right? His hard hit rate's 32%, right? Like, his barrel rate's 5%. It's bad. I mean, it's just really bad. So there's nothing there. Again, I'm not saying you can't believe in Mookie Betts, but if you're believing in Mookie Betts, it's pure hope, which is not the worst thing in the world, but it is pure hope. Now with Freddie Freeman, there are some signs, right? He's been really, really good the last 2 weeks. He had cratered a bit, nothing like we saw, like we're seeing from Mookie, but you know, we've seen Freddie Freeman kind of go up and down this season. The strikeout rate really spiked back in July. Some of that appears to be, you know, that that ship seems to be getting righted. He's going to have tons of counting stats. I mean, he just has a boatload of them in the last couple of weeks. He's still a rock solid stud. I'm holding on to Freddie Freeman and think that he's going to be, you know, he should be a top, you know, at least a top 40 hitter with upside for more. We'll see how long this hot streak lasts. I don't think he's able to hold them as long as he used to. He seems to be a little slower to break the slumps than he used to be, but we're seeing a lot of promising things right now. You know, he's definitely someone that I'm happy I held.
Well, before we go, we'll talk about one guy who might be on the taxi squad next week. I know you've been getting questions about him probably in the Reddit AMAs, and that's Colorado's prospect Warming Burnabell. Fun name, but is he a guy who's going to be on any fantasy teams for you?
Maybe like in NL only. So, you know, Burnabell is, you know, if you look at his minor league track record, he is a, you know, sort of a slab hitter, doesn't walk a bunch, doesn't strike out a bunch, hits for an okay average, not a ton of power to speak of, really. Like, not really. I mean, in AAA, his hard hit rate was 22.8% with an average exit velocity of 84.1 miles an hour. What you need to know about that is that it's really bad. Those are terrible, terrible numbers. They have no business really being in the major leagues. If you hit a 22.8% hard hit rate and your name isn't Chandler Simpson, you're just not going to be in the major leagues very long. So unfortunately, Warming Burnabell is not Chandler Simpson. He doesn't run that much. He can run a little bit, but he's hot right now. He's playing, you know, the Rockies are still at home for a few more days by the time you listen to this. I mean, you can, he's streamable at home, and he was doing good on the road for a little bit. Like, this is purely a, I desperately need a guy who's eligible at a position, and I guess Warming Burnabell is that guy. Like, it's a deep league, you know, play him if you got him sort of guy, not someone I'm aggressively trying to bid on the wire. Like, I think in the one league I bid on him, I bid $1. And I was a little embarrassed to do it because I really should have just waited because we had free, we, you know, it's a free agency league. I probably could have got him for free, but yeah, it's he, I mean, he's not nothing, but I don't suspect we'll be talking about him in September.
Well, that's going to wrap it up for Hacks and Jacks. Scott, we'll see your top 150 hitters list midweek this week. Tell the people where else they can find you and your work.
Yeah, and sorry, y'all, for the short show. I'm just out of voice. This is all I have. I've given you all the voice I have. I'm happy to give it to you, but it's all I got. So you can find me on, obviously, on Twitter at If The Chew Fits, If The CHU Fits. You can find me on Blue Sky, scottchew.pitcherlist.com. I'm going to try to post a little bit more this week. I've been a little slow. My air conditioning went out. It's been a heck of a week in the Chew House, but you know, trying to get it all back together. But yeah, you'll see the hitter list. If not Wednesday afternoon, then you'll see it Thursday morning.
Beautiful. I'm Brett Ford. You can find me at Fade That Man on Twitter. You can find me in the Pitcher List Discord. And make sure you peep my work on Sundays. Fab Insights drops every week talking about NFBC format, fab bids, and things like that. Scott, we're going to get you some monk fruit tea. We're going to get you some. You know, Theraflu, all those wonderful things to help you out. And we'll see you next week, where hopefully you're feeling better.
About to be that sleepy time extra with that valerian root.
Thanks for joining us on Hacks and Jacks. We'll see you next time. Later.